My next guest, always a welcome visitor to the show. He's done everything-ish, from learning Irish and then Mandarin to teaching stand-up comedy in disadvantaged areas to Dancing with the Stars. And now he's back on the road with his new stand-up show, Take the Points. Des Bishop, you're very welcome. What is it about you talented blokes? The previous guy learning Russian and you learning Mandarin.
I guess it's a deep sense of inadequacy. You have to keep trying to prove it to yourself that what you feel about yourself is not true, you know, until the day that you die. It's a tough voice to follow, Ray Fiennes, but I was very happy to be doing it.
Beautiful voice, isn't it?
A wonderful voice, I have to say.
Now, you're dividing your time between Ireland and New York, which is kind of going back to your roots in a funny way.
Yeah, I mean, my mother still lives there, so it's very much back to my roots. My brother lives there with his two kids, so it doesn't feel like a move to a degree, because they've always been there. I've always bounced back and forth. I mean, essentially, I just spend more of my time there than I do here.
And what kind of shows are you doing there, is that going?
Oh, I'm really back in the comedy clubs. It's going great in the sense that I absolutely love being in comedy clubs, having to prove myself again. You have to do, I guess, a slightly punchier kind of stand-up because, you know, it's more like drinks on the table. There's like wait staff and stuff like that. So it kind of makes you a better stand-up comedian. You know, maybe you can get a little jaded when you're walking out to your fans and they love you straight away. Maybe you can lose a little bit of your edge.
Yeah.
So I think it gives you a bit of your edge back, certainly gives you a bit of sharpness back. And it's fun to perform to brand new audiences, go to American cities. And, you know, so far it has been good fun. But in saying that, I still love coming back to Ireland. I love doing this tour. I still have my place in Dublin. My brother lives there. You know, I still have my Irish life too. So I'm very much feet in both camps.
Right. Does New York give you energy?
Does it give me energy? I don't know if it gives me... I mean, I don't know if it gives me energy. It's just exciting. I mean, listen, there's pros and cons because yeah. I'm 40... Well, I was 41, I guess, when I started moving back. I'm a single guy with no kids. So that's the privilege of perhaps some mistakes I've made in my life that I'm able to make this kind of life decision, you know? But at the same time, it is amazing to be able to sort of just give yourself this whole new lease of life, a whole new energy, a whole new audience, right?
Yeah.
So I guess it does energize me. Plus, New York is a great city. I'm from there, but I never felt like I experienced it as an adult.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying that.
And you always felt there was a touch of the outsider here?
Well, I mean, I don't feel a touch of the outsider really, but everyone else seems to when they talk about me, which is absolutely totally fine. And I kind of was making a decision: will I put a bit of energy into the UK where I have like established myself a bit, you know, began the journey, or will I go to the States and essentially be a brand new guy? And what helped me make the decision was I thought, you know what, I just won't be an outsider for a while.
Right.
You know, I'll be somebody that when they hear my accent, they go, that's a New Yorker. And I talk about things perhaps from my childhood. And I wanted to see how that would inspire me.
Right. Given the whole Me Too movement and all of the... I don't know if you'd call it social change or a call for social change that has been going on now in the world of Hollywood, but also here, as it was referred to. Does it make comedy...
And in stand-up, by the way. Like just to make it clear,
yeah.
There has been massive stories within my own industry. It's not just Hollywood. You
right,
know, like Louis
yeah.
C.K. and everything. So, like, it's directly right there in the middle of it all. People you know, you don't expect that to happen. You know, and then suddenly people you know are in the midst of all this. So, yes, you really are in the middle of it.
Being accused or accusing?
No, like I know Louis C.K. Louis C.K. has performed here many times. I've performed with him yeah. many times. So suddenly somebody you know is right there, you know, in the forefront of it. So, which, by the way, I'm not connecting myself to that. But what I am saying is you're talking about Me Too and how it affects, you know, the Hollywood. But actually it directly affected the comedy industry. So
right.
You'd have to be... You know, you'd really have to be brain dead not to have had a thought about it once or twice and what it means to you.
Right. And does it affect how you write comedy?
Well, I mean, the only way in terms of me and the only way it affects me in terms of the way I write comedy is if you're in the middle of a social revolution, the biggest one in my lifetime. I mean, I've seen social change, but the rapid change that's brought on by Me Too and actually the intense understanding of things that you never realized were happening around you. And I'm not just talking about abuse. I'm actually just talking about the way that men are oblivious to how things really are in their favor. You know, and even though you've heard it a million times, until you can really see it in the cold light of day and the intense way that Me Too has brought it, basically what I'm saying is that shock makes me say, as a comedian, I'm going to try to make some jokes about this.
That not dicey? You know, somebody will say, you know, you're not taking this seriously. You're not supposed to be laughing about this.
Well, no. I mean, it would be if you're making jokes about being dismissive about accusations. But if you're making jokes about, as a man, how you sort of missed things. And like, for example, in my current show that I'm doing here in Ireland, I have a whole routine about consent, which was actually more inspired by something that happened to Aziz Ansari, just in terms of where the idea came from in my head to do a joke about the importance of talking about consent. But also, obviously, really important in Ireland with everything that we experienced last year with the Paddy Jackson rape trial. I thought, well, this is something important to talk about. And the great thing about stand-up comedy in relation to something that's awkward to talk about, like consent and sexual behavior and power, is that actually have a little bit more freedom. People are a little bit less uptight when you talk about it. And in the freedom of that lack of uptightness, you can be a bit more frank and be a bit more honest. And at the end of the day, I'm not doing jokes accusing men of being one way or women of being another. I'm doing jokes about saying, moving forward, how are we going to be really clear about letting people know what's acceptable and what's not. That's all the jokes are about. So I'm not too concerned about people saying this is dicey, because I know that it's a conversation that needs to happen. And the great thing about stand-up is I also know that if I don't nail it in terms of the information, it's still a safe place to be wrong. You know, so in that when I'm wrong, somebody can tell me, this is why you're wrong, and then I can update the information to make it better information.
Right. The word toxic masculinity gets thrown around like snuff at a wake now. That's another thing, well, within that, I presume, that you address.
Well, actually, in terms of the word, well, toxic masculinity and masculinity in general, that's what I'm trying to actually write about at the moment. I'm going to Melbourne next month for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. And coincidentally enough, that routine that I have about consent was, I developed that at last year's Melbourne Festival. That's where I began talking about that. So what I'm hoping to talk about at this year's Melbourne Festival, and I'm working on it and I have some stuff, is about the concept of toxic masculinity, masculinity in general, and just the confusion around what is a positive way for a man to see themselves, or in fact, looking at how men can accept a way broader definition of what masculinity is and find, I guess, a more positive masculinity. Because in fairness, I guess a lot of men feel like they're under attack, right? You see that a lot.
Yeah,
people
they
say,
do.
Men feel like they're under attack. And this is a weird comparison, but I remember I did Join the Hood in Mount Vernon in Belfast, and I was working with loyalists. And Billy Hutchinson, who was a signatory of the Good Friday Agreement and was an admitted murderer in the UVF, told me that he feared for loyalism because people see themselves as victims because they can't put themselves in the role of realizing all the privilege that they had for all that time, right? And I never thought that I would identify.
Did he say that?
He did.
Right.
Well, no, you'll jam me up now. There's Bishop Sven. I'm making a long-winded point because I was kind of going back into recall about the conversation I had. The point was that now, as a man, there have been times, like, I get defensive, like a lot of men do. This stuff is being thrown at you and you get defensive. I think it's a natural reaction. And I saw myself in that mindset of, why is this happening to us? Because it's very hard to see yourself in a situation where you have it easier than others until it's blatantly in your face. I think the defensiveness is okay once you tackle it. Like, that's what a therapist would say to you, is like, oh, why are you getting defensive? And a good therapist will push you and maybe you can get beyond that. So my mission for my material about masculinity is to get beyond the defensiveness for myself and obviously for other men in the audience, that they don't have to constantly attack back. Because I think the default reaction is, what about women or whatever? And it's like, well, what about, who cares about women? They can deal with their stuff. Let's deal with our stuff.
Just to go back to, there's the masculinity thing and the feminist thing, But there's also the big R word, which is the racist thing. And speaking, I think it was you that said nobody seems to be able to tell the difference between a racist joke and a liberal joke that comments on racism.
Well, who said that?
John Ronson.
Oh, right. Sorry, I'm just hearing that quote for the first time.
All right. OK, well, what I'm trying to get at is, if you want to address racism, if you want to address consent, if you want to address so-called toxic masculinity, how do you get it across that you're not approving of the subject, if you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, well, I think that's the skill of finding out how to push that material. I mean, I constantly, like, I just try to put it in the realm of, here's the things I think I understand, and here's a way that I'm going to try to put it out in a funny way to help you understand it also,
right.
You know? And that's my mission. I mean, I don't tackle racism that much, particularly now that I live in the States, and, you know, I just don't think that I can understand it, so I don't tackle it,
right.
You know? Whereas I think I can understand consent. I think I can understand trying to find, like, a more positive sort of goal-orientated way for men to think about how they should be in the future. You know, I think all that stuff is healthy. I'm doing a new sex and dating podcast with Katie Boyle called The Shift. And we're also trying to sort of be like, you know, put out a sort of a sex positive message to Irish people that grew up around a lot of shame around sex. So all the time you're trying to be better,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And even with the Maeve thing, Maeve asked me to put that, just to make it clear, she asked me to put that podcast back up, and I did put it back up for a while, you know, so people could hear the conversation. Because at the end of the day, like, I'm not afraid to be wrong. It's difficult to be wrong nowadays because you get a lot of heat.
Do you get a lot of heat, generally speaking, online with social media?
I really don't. It's only like if a hot topic comes up, and that's just like a byproduct of the modern age. However, you know, I think if you stay true to what you're about, which is constantly trying to evolve, and
yeah.
You know, it's okay to be wrong. It's a little more dangerous to be wrong nowadays, but at the same time, you can't let that stop you.
Okay. Now, Dancing with the Stars, are you still dancing?
Well, you know, I'm not going to lie. I actually was hope. Well, no, I want Fred to do well. However, had Fred got kicked out, which I'm glad it hasn't happened, I probably would have been doing a bit of dancing in my live show with Julia. But Fred has done exceptionally well, which I'm very happy with. And I think everyone should vote for him tomorrow night. But as a result of Fred's success,
or what other choices they would have.
Of course, people can vote for whoever they like.
Yeah,
you know. But anyway, I'm joking. But I do have a great friendship with Julia and Kai, and I had hoped that perhaps we'd be able to put a little bit of choreography together for my live show in Vicar Street, but it just so happens that they're all a bit busy.
So you're really following this still?
Well, I love it. I mean, I loved Dancing with the Stars, and I loved the experience of learning how to dance. And I think it's a fun show, you know? It's not a show that I ever would have thought I would have enjoyed, but I think it's a fun show and, you know, people enjoy it for what it is. So, yeah, I'm following it.
Absolutely. There you are. Now, you're in Vicar Street tonight, but our listeners can kind of forget about that because it's all sold out. And then you're heading around the country?
Oh, yeah, I'm in Limerick March 16th, and then I'm in Galway the weekend after, and then I head off to Melbourne if anybody's in Melbourne.
Right.
But really, if you're going to do anything, after you listen to Marion Finucane, listen to The Shift, our new podcast. It's doing really well, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Okay. It's called The Shift, and it is easily accessible. How much time in New York and how much time are you? You're getting tired of the travel, are you?
The traveling's a little bit tiring, but I guess it's kind of half and half. It'll be half and half in 2019 anyway.
Right. Okay, listen, as always, thank you very much indeed for coming in, and lovely to see you.